Hello and welcome to the best of SEN Breakfast podcast. There's a whole lot more on the SEN website, but for now, here are some of today's best bits.
Fish schnitz, handmade pan-cooked schnitzel, and Melbourne Airport parking. You can now park closer for cheaper.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport. Breakfast with Gary Lyon and Tim Watson.
The most powerful man in footy, Stephen Hawking, is going to join us around 7.30. You're going to get this AFL Supergroup sorted out. Wisp, I'm interested to talk to Steve about that, how that's going to be formed. We're also going to nominate and induct another Click Go This Year's person, an international superstar you've spoken to. Gavin Wanganeen, one of your men, is going to join us. And then Hutto After Eight, which is front and centre, big issues in footy. Looking forward to that. But right now, it's the confessional. And it is before the game starts tonight. What is the bounce time? 7:20, is it? Something like that?
Around that time, yeah.
Before it starts, we carry baggage into a season from last year. And we carry it from 2 years ago, 5 years ago. And it doesn't work. And as a commentator, especially, I've got to park it.
Have you got preconceived ideas?
Yep. My word,
about Melbourne?
Well, I have. I kept saying...
What about Richmond?
What have I got for Richmond? Yeah, but I'm prepared to park everything.
Okay.
I'm judging everyone anew.
Okay.
Like, Carlton, you said, oh, they can't score. Well, yep. Park that and judge them from tonight.
Exactly.
Can you do that for me?
I can. 9429 1116. Join in this conversation this morning because your opportunity to park stuff...
Confess.
Yeah.
You'll feel better. You'll go into a season with a feeling liberated and free. You can start.
Can you put your Monsignor voice on?
Yes, son. I can.
You know, I'm going to park. I've been negative.
I'm going to park. You're going to confess.
Okay, I'm going to confess. What? I've been very negative about this idea that Easton Wood can make it as a forward for the Bulldogs. Okay? I am prepared to just park that and confess that, okay.
That's a classic, Wisp.
I'm going to move on.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
I'm just going to judge him. I'm not going to be... Because you know what happens? When you actually say something, then you look for reasons, often, to back up your
100%
view.
100% self-fulfilling prophecies.
Exactly. So I'm not going to do that. I'm going to have an open mind when I watch him play over the weekend, and I'm going to judge him purely as a forward.
You know your penance?
My penance is?
Your penance is to go and watch the last JLT Western Bulldog game with a clear mind.
Okay, thank you.
Go forth, son.
Thank you,
Greg from Muralbark. Welcome, Greg. Tell me, what do you need to have purged?
Guys, you've just got to purge 2017. It is gone. It is history. It'll never come back. Richmond will go back to back. And Gaz, as much as I love you, brother, the D's are buried. They don't have the ticket to make the finals.
Well, you've got
to
park that, though, Greg.
But this is my point, Greg. That's your preconceived idea, of which we all have them. I am saying to you, as just a lover of footy, which I can tell in your voice, you got to say, nah, I've thought that about Melbourne, but I'm prepared to just clean the slate and judge them on what happens from round one.
Yes, are you prepared to do that, Greg?
I can do this, but I have massive, what's the term, mental tick about the season.
Hey, Greg.
We cannot purge.
Greg, you need to go away and give us a call maybe tomorrow. Yeah. I'm not sure you're ready to make your confession.
No,
yet.
He's not. He came in strong, and I thought, oh, here's someone we're going to turn around.
Okay, have you got any preconceived ideas? I think I even know what they are about Melbourne, but can you actually...
Yeah, I've
seek
had
penance.
Trust issues with Melbourne.
Yes.
I've had, that I can't trust them to back up on a great performance too. I'm parking all that. I'm looking at Melbourne with a clear mind, and I'm saying I will judge them freshly and anew from Sunday at 3:30 at the MCG.
Is there anything in your mind, a negative, about the fact that they didn't go on that camp?
No.
There's no residual for you?
No, I've purged all that. Okay. I've not dealt with that before I even thought about the confessional. I tell you, here's one that I would love a Collingwood supporter to ring up and say, ever since they appointed Nathan Buckley, I've carried that around with me. I don't think he can coach, or I've got doubts about whether he can take us where we are. Yeah, he should have left the club and coached somewhere else and then come back and coach us. All those that Collingwood supporters would have heavy, heavy hearts and souls. I would encourage them, Tim. As the Monsignor this morning. Leave it. Park it. Just say, no, I'm going to judge Bucks on this year.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to worry about last year. I'm not going to worry about my concerns about whether he can or he can't, whether Eddie should have this and that, and whether he should have... Nah, Bucks is our coach. He has a clean slate from me.
It goes deeper than that, though, because I have a preconceived idea about Collingwood that they still haven't got the ability to set up enough goal-scoring opportunities. So yes. Already I'm thinking, okay, the reason why they can't be a top eight side this year, I watched them through the JLT. I still don't think they've been able to rectify that part of their game. Ian's in Bulleen. Good morning, Ian.
Yeah, good morning, boys.
You're talking to Monsignor Lyon.
Hello, Monsignor. Look, I'm just frustrated with Richmond, almost angry at the moment.
Why is that? What?
Well, because we haven't won a flag for 6 bloody months.
Okay. Ian, go. You're talking jest.
Go forth. You're worshipping in another church. Benny's there from Hastings. G'day, Ben.
G'day, mate. And give Bucks one more chance.
Are you prepared to, Benny?
I am, mate. This year's Bucks' year, and let's see how he goes.
Have you been negative about him in the past?
I have. I've been quite upset watching the Pies go down and down and down, and now I'm ready to start fresh. And also, I'm ready to see the Pies do the Hawks hoodoo, because I'm having a kid in June, and my partner goes for Hawthorn, I go for Collingwood, and whoever wins, the child goes for that team.
Okay. What about a name for this child? Do you know what sex the baby's going to be, Ben?
It's a surprise, so not that far yet.
Well, are you going to name him or her after your favourite player? I don't think
so. He's gone. Anthony's there from Glenbrook. Hey, Ant.
G'day, how are you, fellas?
Good. What do you got for us?
Just as a Carlton supporter, I'd really like to forgive Nathan Buckley at Collingwood for all of his past sins and give him the free rein to coach as he pleases, because I think he's doing such a good job.
Go on, Nathan.
100%. Well done. Well said.
I listened to the interview, a very good interview yesterday with Jared Wakeley, Nathan Buckley too, and he seems to be in a very zen sort of a space, Bucks, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. He's...
I know you listened to it. I know you were impressed too. And
I'm always impressed with Nathan.
He performs and he answers questions. He's very articulate, all of that. But then I thought one of the real insights into how he's thinking was when the question was asked about Jordan DeGoey, and he responded in this way as to how he treated that matter and where he went to find the answers.
I personally rang Stevie J, actually. It's probably the closest situation I could think of. I know the stories and I know the way that history has been written, but what was the most significant turning point for you? Was that a turning point? Was that the catalyst for a change in behaviour? He said the most significant thing was the fact that his teammates were the ones that took the lead.
I mean, just a smart, clever thing to do.
He did also then go on to say that 20 minutes later, Scott Pendlebury, they came together to talk, and he explained to him what he'd done with Stevie J, and Scott Pendlebury said, well, you beat me by 20 minutes. I had the same thought and was going to make the same phone call.
Well, you know, that tells me.
They're on the same page.
Ben's in Epping. Good morning, Ben.
It's Sean.
Oh, sorry, Sean. Good morning to you, Sean.
Hey, good morning.
You've come through to the confessional this morning. What is it that you'd like to confess?
Well, I'm a Collingwood member. I've been bagging Nathan Buckley for the last 5 years. I haven't been happy. I was prepared at the end of last season to give him one more chance. He's got this season, and I say this season only, Collingwood to make the finals.
Righto, Sean. You can now go forward with a clean soul, and you can just go and support Collingwood. Don't take any prejudice to the footy about Nathan Buckley. You go along to the footy against Hawthorn on Saturday night, and you just watch it unfold, and you'll be liberated, I'm telling you. Some of them text messages, I'm going to purge the thought of Abbott missing half the season with injury. So that person's sitting there going, oh, you know, I love Gazza, but he's going to miss half the season of injury. Park it. Don't even worry about it.
Hi, guys. I'll forgive the umpires for the 2017 grand final. Not this year, for what they did last year in the grand final.
Geelong support. This is another one that's coming through thick and fast. I will forget my concerns about Joel Selwood being a ducker.
Right.
That you know what? That consumes far too many people in footy. And it comes through all the time, Wisp. They forget about Joel Selwood he's playing 250 games this week. They look at him and go, ducker, hate the way he stages for free kick. And they forget what an unbelievable competitor, what a fantastic captain and an outstanding footballer he is.
Will that extend to Lindsay Thomas as well, now that he's over there in Port Adelaide?
Well, yes. Judge them on what happens this year, Tim. See, you're looking at me, I don't think you've got the capacity to do this. This morning's conversation started thanks to Camwell Electric, your heating, cooling and appliance specialist. After the break, we need to give Sammy Edmund a bit more time. We cut him short. We're going to discuss the St Kilda Footy Club situation too. Explosive comments from Nick Revolt last night about the move to Seaford and Steve Hocking not far away.
And we also need to examine these footies movers and shapers too. I've got the list from 50 down to 10, and I'm really disappointed as to where they've placed Gary Lyon. Extremely disappointed. If he's not better than 42, I'll go he for Tiggy.
Big exclusive though here, guys. Wait for this. The return tomorrow from 8 a.m. here on SEN 1116 of the Godfather, Mike Sheehan.
Bang!
He's back.
That is a massive announcement. We've been waiting for Mike, and he has said, I'm a big game operator. He needs a season to start before he wanders back in.
That's right. I'll tell you what else is back quickly, though. The return of the Torp. AFL Footy Ops manager Steve Hocking to join you guys very shortly, but he's declared the suffocating forward press might have brought back the good old-fashioned roost, which I like.
There was a lot of it on display in the JLT.
Especially kick-ins.
Yeah.
A lot from kick-ins.
And from a couple of free kicks paid in the centre of the ground where clubs went back and just went bang and got it in deep.
Didn't it open up the game too when the ball just travels a bit deeper than all the defenders and even the forwards think?
Yeah, and you know what else? I even love it when it doesn't work. Because if you're kicking...
The chaos ball.
Yeah, well, if you're kicking forward particularly and it doesn't work, your forwards should be the first to react. And defence is set up for the predictable kick. And they outnumber set up... The outnumber is set up for the predictable 45-metre kick down the line.
How many Torps... I want you to count the Torps tonight when you're covering the game.
Tonight?
For Fox, okay? I want you to predict now, how many Torps will we kick tonight in the game?
I'll have a think about that.
No, I want you to predict off the top of your head.
I've got Steve Hocking, the most powerful man here, ready to go. He's listening, and I'm not sure that's going to be high on the agenda, although he would appreciate it if it opened the game up a little bit. Welcome, Steve.
Hi, Gary. Hi, Tim.
Good to talk to you on the eve of, well, you being the overseer of all things footy with the first game only hours, what, about 12 hours away. How are you feeling? Confident that we're in good shape?
Yeah, very confident, Gary, and really looking forward to it. Richmond and Carlton, the MCG, unfurling the flag. It's a great way to start a big weekend of football.
Good morning to you, Hock. What about the Katie Brennan saga this week, the way that it's played out, unfolded, where we're at right now? Are we going to learn some lessons about what's taken place this week?
Well, I think that the main lesson, Tim, from our point of view, is that, we've got empathy for Katie. We understand that... potentially may miss a grand final, but what Michael Christian has done is ruled on the dangerous tackle, and it's the second time in the year in the season that's happened. So it's hard to ignore that. But Cody and the Bulldogs have worked through this week the avenues that are available to them, and they've got another opportunity today. So we'll just sit tight and see where that lands for her.
And there's a bit of a disparity, though, between the men and the women, isn't there, in terms of how this has been judged and assessed, given that, due to financial concerns is what has been the issue put forward, that the second one for the women would be a suspension rather than a further financial impost?
Yeah, it is, Gary. It's a relevant point. It's certainly something we'll have a look at the end of the year, but it's important to also communicate that the AFLPA were really strong on the fact that they didn't want any financial sanction. It's landed where it currently is, but there'll be some work to do around that certainly once the season finishes. And, we'll look at a whole range of different things regarding that.
It's 27 minutes to 8. We're talking to the AFL Football Operations Manager, Steve Hocking, probably the most powerful man in the game right now. I haven't actually seen where he sits on this list that's out here at the moment. I know Gary's at 42. I'm expecting, Steve, that you'll be somewhere in the top 10. The runners, the idea that there was not going to be any runners or limited runners times that runners could appear on the field this year, and now we know that it's going to stay as it was. Can you tell us how that meeting went down? Because we've been told and it's been reported that Bevo was very strong and very powerful in this meeting, and the rest of the coaches fell behind him. Were you unhappy about their response, or did you expect it to play out that way?
I expected it to play out that way, Tim. It's a good discussion to continue with throughout this year. Part of the thinking behind the trial within the JLT, and it was a trial, it was related to allowing the players to play more instinctively and the coaches, and I felt that we actually saw that, you know, throughout the series. And sitting in front of the coaches at a breakfast last week, it was evident, even beyond Luke. I think it's unfair to just discuss Luke. But the coaches made a point that they weren't ready for it. And I've been transparent around making sure that whatever changes are going to happen in the game, that we'd like to have that in front of the clubs as early as possible. And our preference would be around October in a season. So at the back end of 2018, October this year, if we're looking to make any changes to that level within the game, we would have that communicated to them so that they can actually spend the pre-season adapting their game style. But certainly, if people sort of feel that the coaches have led the charge on that, I've considered that as part of that conversation, as has Bill last week, that they'd be a little misguided if they felt that that style of communication moving forward is something that would impact our decision making. We're looking to work with people, so you know that's what we're trying to establish here, and we'll continue to work in cooperation and collaborate with the clubs and the coaches are part of that.
I think it's a great result. I think everyone should be happy the way that the consultation and collaborative discussions are always going to be the best result. And I guess to that end, I don't want to call it a super group, but we haven't got another name for it right now. But the discussion around this group of people that are going to be assembled by yourself and Gil and others that made up of club presidents, CEOs, coaches, players, footy managers, and an AFL Players Association representative, is that basically correct in terms of the makeup of it? And how quickly will you establish this panel of people?
Yeah, it is, Gary. That's essentially how it's going to look. The biggest challenge for us will be getting it to a level where it's a good working group. My phone and my inbox has just been flat out in the last few days.
From people volunteering or putting names forward?
Yeah, definitely, Gary. There's a real appetite for it. Clubs have got the ability to put names forward, but you know, there's individuals that have also made contact and have shown a strong interest in it.
Is it a paying gig, Steve?
No, it won't be, Gary. It's voluntary, but it's it'll be based around really sitting across the game. So you're going to have we're going to have the ability to feed in information, you know, in a variety of different ways around fixture and competition structures and so forth. You know, the rules. And so, different groups will be involved, and even the fans. Like, we're really keen on hearing from the fans. And I've been contacted by a couple of different fan groups. Can they have a seat on it? The thing that we will do is we'll make sure that at different stages, if we're considering certain decisions, that we will get fans in front of it and talk to them about it. So it opens up a great opportunity for us to work with the key people right throughout the industry, being clubs, but also provide transparency for fans, because it's very clear throughout the season when we'll meet. We'll meet a couple of weeks before each commission meeting. But what people need to understand is that committee are making recommendations that will be put through to the commission.
Right, so they're not law. They're not law unto themselves.
No, it's really important people understand that. There'll be a three-year tenure on that. There's been some questions around what you do with coaches, because they've got the availability to be part of that. I'm working with Mark Brayshaw on that to work out, say an Alistair Clarkson, who's very influential. How do you balance that against a younger coach that's just in the game, in the role, and so that you're actually getting a good cross section of the competition, the teams involved. So we're really excited about where we can take this group and the level of decision making that will go on from it.
How many torps do you think we'll see at the MCG tonight?
I hope we see a few, Tim. I think the three of us would be pretty happy to see that.
We'd love it.
I was really pleased. Yeah, I was really pleased with some of that we saw. I think Zach Tui might have got the biggest distance throughout the JLT. Down at Colac there with his torp.
He did. He smashed it.
Fullback. What's that?
He did. He smashed one for down there at Maui that went about 80. It'd be nice to see a couple of those tonight. Hey, Steve, We're going to let you go. We know it's a busy day for you. I've just been so impressed with the work you've done in a short period of time. Footy's in good hands, I think, and good luck for not only tonight but for the season ahead.
For Schnitz, handmade pan-cooked schnitzel and Melbourne Airport parking. One-day terminal parking now only $51.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport. Breakfast with Gary Lyon and Tim Watson.
We're out of seat, but everyone's saying what a great facility it was for us along the journey. That's rubbish. That's spin. Because it wasn't a world-class facility. Geographically, it was tough for the players.
Did it rip the soul out of...
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, for the group at the time, on the back of a grand final in 2009 and 2010, arguably the best list that we'd accumulated in the club's history, and then to go down to Seaford, away from the spiritual home, it crushed the group at the time.
That was Nick Revolt last night making his debut on AFL 360, and a fantastic debut it was, really giving you a rare and honest and brutal insight into how things were at the St Kilda Footy Club when they decided to leave Moorabbin and make their base at the Seaford Footy Club. Amongst other things, he said the playing group were crushed. It ripped the soul out of their footy club and questioned whether or not it maybe affected their capacity to get that elusive premiership. Russ Lyon coached 2009-10. He coached the 2011 season and left. In dramatic circumstances, with maybe the Seaford move might have helped make that decision. But the man that was charged to take over was Scott Watters, and he's been good enough to join us this morning. Scotty, welcome.
Gary, Tim, how are you?
Well, it's great to talk to you this morning. We're just trying to work out how bad the situation was down at Seaford. Can you give us a coach's view of whether or not you felt that the soul had been ripped out of your footy club because the boys had been moved 25 minutes down the road?
Look, I think there's always a multitude of reasons. It's never as simple as just one line or one thing. But I think it was really tough for the senior players in particular. I think the new players coming to the club, there are a lot of young kids coming in. I don't think they really knew any different. But for the senior players that had been through the Moorabbin experience and been through some grand finals, I think in the end, Seaford really became, it almost became a symbol for what they'd missed. But there were other factors as well, but Seaford certainly wasn't a place where the senior players wanted to be.
Hey, Scotty, good morning. It's Tim here. Were you shocked or surprised by what you inherited at that period of time with that playing group and their mindset about where they were?
Oh, again, I don't want to generalise. No. Because look, a lot of the young players I thought were fantastic, and a lot of the senior players were fantastic too. But there were a multitude of things there. You know, 2 weeks into my tenure, the club informed me that they were $200,000 over the salary cap. The drafting in the 5 years prior wasn't great. But the lost grand finals took a toll mentally on a lot of the senior players, I think, and it was taking them a while to come out of that. And as I said, I think Seaford then, on top of that, just became a real... It probably felt quite soulless for that group who had such a strong attachment to Moorabbin. And whilst they were at Moorabbin, they were having... You know, they were in their premiership window in 2009, 2010. So Seaford sort of symbolised probably everything that they'd lost in some ways. So it was pretty tough for them.
What about the facilities themselves? I mean, Nick spoke about the fact that they weren't up to world-class standard or elite standard or whatever. I'm not quite sure exactly the term he used. Did you have a concern about the way the place was set up physically?
Look, the facilities weren't benchmark facilities, but they weren't horrendous either. They probably would have been on par with Fremantle Football Club facilities, not their new facilities, their older facilities. So they'd be very similar in standard to that. But were they benchmark facilities, if you compare them to a Waverley or a Hawthorn, no, they wouldn't have been. They were middle of the road as far as that goes.
But I guess you mentioned Waverley and you talk about how hard it was for the players because of, you know, the fact that they had this affiliation connection to Moorabbin. I mean, the Hawthorn boys had to do it, didn't they? I mean, Glenfrey Oval, as we said this morning, was in the heart of Melbourne. It's where they were comfortable. It's where they lived. And all of a sudden, they're having to go out to Waverley. And it didn't appear to have the same sort of backlash that we're hearing about now.
No, and I think that's why I think it's more than just one line or one comment about the actual venue, because Hawthorn went to Waverley, but what Hawthorn had was a great list. They were financially secure. So they actually used it as a foundation and a board to move on to some great success. But there were other factors that contributed
But I do think Seaford sort of became the symbol for what was lost. But there were a multitude of factors that sat underneath it. As I mentioned, the drafting being the main thing. You know, you have 5 years of poor drafting, then your talent eventually runs dry and you can't perform. So if you're winning games, I think the drive to Seaford might have been a little bit easier, but it was pretty tough for them, particularly the senior players. As I said, the younger players coming through, they were just keen to play and get an opportunity.
Okay, well, your senior players are your leaders, Scotty, in the end. And if they weren't happy, did you sense that feeling of unhappiness and permeated throughout the group? Because they set the tone. Senior players set the tone for the environment of a footy club. And you've said a number of times that Seaford was a place that the senior players didn't want to be. Did that play itself out in a training sense or the way they went about it?
Gary, I reckon the most important thing you can have at any team or any club or any business is purpose. And if you know that you've got purpose, whether your purpose is, you know, developing and rebuilding a club and starting again, or whether your purpose is to play in finals, you need to have that. And I think St Kilda, for a period of time, didn't really know why it existed. It had missed grand finals, and it was in that really murky place of, are we rebuilding or are we contending? And again, whilst all that was occurring, they've had to move from a place that they absolutely loved. You know, they did love Moorabbin, the senior players particularly, because they had such great memories from there. I think that was really hard for the senior group to swallow.
Hey Scotty, just on reflection, and you've had a long time to reflect on that period of time, what would you have done differently?
Not much, Tim. In all reality, I actually was well aware of the circumstance that I was walking into when I turned up at St Kilda. So the only thing, upon reflection, is I would have loved to have known that the club was already in a salary cap breach prior to getting there, because that means you can't actually recruit any players in a two-year period. So there are some things you know before you walk into a club, and then there's some things you sort of learn when you get there. But you make the choice. You put your hand up to coach. I willingly put my hand up to coach St Kilda, knowing that there were some challenges, and there's not much that I would change, mate. I don't really have too many regrets.
No, you don't carry any bitterness about that time, Scott?
No, not at all. I think you enter an AFL coaching team, and you know yourself. You enter an AFL coaching gig knowing that there are some circumstances that are in your control and there are some that aren't. So you do the best with what you've got. I look at a lot of the younger players now that have had opportunity. A lot of those players were actually given games probably before they deserved them in some ways, you know, during my tenure. So I look at Jack Nunes, and I love the explosion of Jack Stevens. So he was given huge opportunities through that two-year period. So we had to do the best with what we had at the time. We played kids, and that gives that club a chance at some point, hopefully.
What are you doing now, Scotty?
CEO of a foundation called Life Changer. Gaz, we're doing a lot of work with 11 to 16-year-old kids, helping sort of build positive identity in Australian youth. There's a lot of challenges that kids are facing now, so we're trying to assist and support in that area, which I'm really enjoying.
Fantastic. And any footy involvement?
Under 10s, under 12s, under 14s, that's enough. That's a big Sunday.
That'll be your toughest gig of all.
It is, mate.
Yeah, very good of you to join us. Really appreciate it.
The Schnitz, handmade pan-cooked schnitzel, and Melbourne Airport parking. You can now park closer for cheaper.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport. Breakfast with Gary Lyon and Tim Watson.
And you wouldn't want to be working anywhere else on a day like this, ahead of an unbelievable sporting 4 or 5 days. Oh. Round one of the AFL season kicks off tonight, Whisper. It is Carlton and Richmond. It's going to be extraordinary. We've got the Test Match cricket on, well, it'll be on Classic Rock 1377 until the footy's over. Then you get back to 11:16 this year.
Gary, I had dinner with some international guests in our city last night, and they can't believe the buzz that is in this city right now.
Well, they'll be in front of the radio right now, because a brand new segment's about to take the radio world by storm. It's time for Front and Square.
It would help if you could get the name right first up, Gaz.
God, damn.
It's front and centre, morning on front and centre, 173 days of celebrations and preparations. All done and dusted. It all starts, as you said, at the G tonight. We can't wait for that. And I'm going to ask to you guys, for each of the Melbourne teams, is it glass half full or glass half empty?
We'll touch base with the Richmond fans. How are they feeling? Are they ready to put it all behind them? We think the team is. Also, as we're all looking forward to the season, we'll continue with this story about St Kilda, who seem to be looking back after the comments from Nick Revolt last night. We'll touch base with our very own Nicky Del Santo to take us inside the four walls of Seaford that did stand in the past. But, of course, they've moved now down to Moorabbin. So let's get into front and centre, Gaz. at 8 minutes past eight. Coach Gary and Coach Tim as well. I'm going to ask you some questions about the weekend ahead a little bit later on. But I want to, Tim, you just touched before we get into half full or half empty. Do you think the Richmond fans are ready to put behind them the premiership?
No, I don't.
And if not, is that a fact? Is that a factor for the club and therefore the players?
No, it's not.
Given the history of with the Bulldogs last year?
No, I don't think it is. I think that everything that we've seen and heard out of Richmond right now says to me that they are in the right place and the right space to take on this season. But it will only be the performances they put on the board over the first probably month or two that will determine whether or not they're still thinking about what they achieved in 2017.
You're asking whether that can permeate through to the playing group.
Yeah, I am, yeah.
And I don't think it gets to the playing group, but I think it can permeate through the administration if you're not careful.
I think we saw that with the Bulldogs, last year.
A sense of self-satisfaction that they'd got there. And, I heard a lot of... I'm not saying this is from the actual administrators, but the narrative around it was, from a supporters at times, is when things started to not go well for the Dogs, was, I don't care if we don't win another one for 20 years because we've already got our premiership. And yeah.
That was from the supporters.
Yeah. How far that seeps in is the question.
Okay. Hada, did you just say then, though, that it did happen at the Bulldogs last year with the administration?
Well, only in that they were still talking. I think it's really hard because it was an incredible event for the Bulldogs. So I'm not actually being critical, but Peter Gordon was still happily talking about it, round eight, round nine, about, still, and he was joking to a degree about still watching the DVD. So I'm not trying to be critical, but they're big posters, you walk through the Western Bulldogs and there's massive photos of the premiership. And again, the players have to walk through that every day. I'm not being critical of that, but.
Do you think that wouldn't be the case at Richmond right now? There'd be no sign of what took place last year anywhere.
I think there is, but I haven't actually been in there since it, but I believe there is.
Jack Revolt told us, didn't he?
In the players' room somewhere, there's at the back, I think there's a photo of the day, but I think they'd be very conscious of it. And I think the Bulldogs were, and they did their best to try and put it in the right spot. And I think I felt with some of the players, they almost tried too hard and didn't even acknowledge. Easton Wood told us he hadn't even watched the grand final. Mm. And I found that extraordinary. So there's a balance there, isn't there?
It's a great intrigue. It is the intrigue of the season.
Always, whether or not there's going to be a hangover. 9429 1116. Are you following Dimmer's lead and the rest of the Richmond players' lead? Have you put it behind you, or are you going to bask in the afterglow a little bit longer?
Not according to our man, who just said he watched the grand final replay last night with half a dozen tinnies, and the Tigers will be 8-1 back to back. Sean from Botanic Ridge.
Yeah, well, it is. I think we're planning to chat to the cheer squad leader, Jared Egan, at some stage before 9. We might see if we get him. I'll see if he's ready to move on or not.
No, saw some vision of, we're talking Tigers, the Blues, who are the other component of tonight, of course. And, gee, there was a buzz, only from the news reports. They had former players down there training, watching them running around.
Saw Diesel down there.
Diesel was there. Summer's Jono out. There's a good sense of optimism about that footy club as well.
Well, just before we speak to let's get into a bit of glass half full, glass half empty, because we're just going to do the Victorian teams. I'll start with Carlton. So this is what I'm going to do. I'll give the view from the glass half full, view from the glass half empty, and then get you to which one are you more, full or empty on these teams. So glass half full for Carlton. One of only five teams to win both JLT games. Talent assembled is undeniable. Curnow's ready to rip. Cripps is fit and about to be one of the best mids in the comp. Kennedy gives them grunt. Paddy Dow's already made an immediate impact through the JLT. And Bolts has taught them finally how to move the ball and score. Ooh. They're headed for the eight.
I'm on board.
Glass half full. Okay, glass half empty. Some positive signs, but you've got to be realistic. Their best player for last year, Sam Doherty, gone. And their best mid, Bryce Gibbs, are also gone. The kids are too young to achieve anything in 2018.
I'm a half fuller. I think and that was pretty self-evident by what you just said there. They'll, of course, miss Sam Doherty, who's a star. But I think the third or fourth year of Brendan Bolton, fourth, fourth year, has got to a stage where he's assembled a list with Stephen Silvani that will allow him to be a little bit more expansive in the way he plays. And the numbers tell you in the JLT they've done that. They sacrifice some of their defensive stuff in the process, yep. Wisp. But I'm half full.
I think they're going to massively miss Gibbs. I think he was even underrated. And Doherty, too, across halfback. Two of their best three players last year. You don't replace those, and they haven't replaced those over the summer months. Even though they've recruited well and they've got some young players into that mix, I still think they're at that bottom part of the competition.
All right. The Tigers, hard to be too empty on them, but half-full premiership side, only getting better. Best spread of elite players in the business who play on different lines. I think that's an important part, including Dusty, who's the very best and plays on two lines. No one is too old, perfect demographic. Have come back hungry, as the JLT showed. Recruits like Jack Higgins, together with hungry players who missed out like Bolton, Conker, Miles and Corey Ellis, will keep everyone on their toes. Half-empty. Following on from a flag is tough, as we've discussed. It's almost impossible to have the same drive, especially when the fans, like we're about to speak to now, will be ever-present with big photos on the wall. Can't expect to have the same run with injury to the best four players who barely missed a game. Other teams now know what to expect from their pressure. Dimmer can say what he likes, but they'll be the hunted this year. The scoring was off the charts in the finals last year. Surely they can't keep that going. Are you glass half full or glass half empty, Tim?
I'm glass half full. I don't know how you can be possibly glass half empty about Richmond. I still think they're on the rise. And they still, their brand of football, right? Their brand of football is to hunt. That's what made them so great last year. We didn't talk about their ability to go out there and score and attack. It was the same thing last year.
Can you do the same when you've got a target on you?
That's the unanswered question, but I think that's the way they play. That's they're the benchmarks in everything that they do. It's the pressure that they apply to the opposition, the way they hunt.
I'm half full, but I found a weakness.
Where?
The team's been announced. Jaden Short is playing centre-half back, and he's on Levi Casbolt, who's at centre-half forward. That's about 3 metre size difference.
Is he the shortest centre-half back that's ever lined
short,
up?
He's a short centre-half back.
It just underlines the paper teams mean absolutely nothing these days.
Nonsense.
All right, quarter past eight. Now, Richmond are going to honour the Tiger Army tonight. This is interesting. Maybe it goes a bit to what we've been discussing, because in the past, my memory is with most flags, the players, it's always been awkward, but the players have been lining up.
Yep.
And the flag has been unfurled from the previous season. Well, Richmond players will not be there tonight. This is all going to happen while they're still in the rooms. So Richmond have got, they're going to honour the Tiger Army. I think they've got a member for each of the 11 flags they've previously won. We're expecting a crowd of over 90,000. And Richmond flag bearer tonight and cheer squad president Jared Ryan has... Jared Egan.
He's not the JK, man.
Has joined us on the line. G'day, Jared.
He hung up when you called him Jared Ryan. Right. Understandably, too. Yeah. I like the fact that the players are going to be down in the race. Yeah, and I think that isn't pointed to what you're talking about.
What are they afraid of?
Well, they're not afraid of anything, I don't
So
think.
Why don't they stand out there on the ground like previous clubs have done and just watch the flag hurl?
Because they're
up
not going to do it in round two or three or four.
It doesn't matter, though. It's an appreciation.
Well, I think, ask me.
Yeah, I know. But
why change your routine? If this is their pre-game routine that they're going to have throughout the course of the season, why change it for round one? They've had plenty of celebrating the players.
Or what happens during the finals? What happens on Anzac Day?
Don't come out and look at a flag being
Well, you have to line up, though, don't you? I mean, that's all they're doing, really. They're just lining up there on the ground.
No. Both teams do that. I don't reckon Carlton are going to line up for the hoisting of the Richmond flag, are they?
But what difference does it make?
Well, I just told you.
I'm saying that I think that they should be out there. They should be lined up, and they should be looking at the flag.
Jared, join us again. Jared Egan, the Richmond flag bearer and cheer squad president. G'day, Jared.
G'day, guys. How are you?
We're great. Now, you joined the cheer squad in 1977, so obviously a long-time man, Tiger man. Tell us, are you ready to put the flag behind you?
Not quite yet. we've got a bit of celebrating still to do. Tonight is a huge night, and I think the party continues tonight, and... depending on the result, it could continue on for a few more weeks.
Let's be honest, Jared. If you don't win another flag for 20 years, you won't mind, because last year was so great.
No, I want a flag this year again.
Okay.
I want back-to-back.
Well, fair enough, too. And
what's your role tonight?
I'm one of the flag bearers tonight, so get to carry the flag from Punt Road across to the G. and then a lap around to the, of the G before we hand it over to Peggy for raising the flag.
Are you disappointed the players won't be out there on the ground to see that unfurled? I would be.
Shut up, Wispy. Let him answer the question and stop trying to lead the witness.
No, look, it would be nice if they were, but they're at the same thing. They're back to business tonight and getting another win on the board for the Tigers to kick the season off.
Before we let you go, Jarrett, what about grand final night? What happened for you and the cheer squad?
Quite a bit of celebrating of that night. It's very, very good. We went to a place in Richmond and had a meal and a few drinks and sang the song a few times.
I reckon you're still in premiership mode with Jared, so. And you should be as well. Good luck tonight. It's going to be a great occasion for all the Richmond supporters. Thanks for joining us.
For Schnitz, handmade pan-cooked schnitzel and Melbourne Airport parking. 1 hour terminal parking, now only $12.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport. Breakfast with Gary Lyon and Tim Watson.
To go down to Seaford, away from the spiritual home, it crushed the group at the time.
I think in the end, Seaford really became, it almost became a symbol for what they'd missed. But there were other factors as well, but Seaford certainly wasn't a place where the senior players wanted to be.
One of those senior players is our very own Nick Del Santo, who's been good enough to join us this morning. Del, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
If you've got young children, you'd have been up and about early. You across this whole situation with Rui and now Scotty Waters this morning?
I didn't hear Scotty's comments. I didn't hear Nick say that last night, but to be honest, I knew how Nick felt. This has been going on since, I think we moved there after the Christmas break 2011. And Nick's comments, I guess, ring true to myself and, you know, a large part of that playing group that had grown up at Moorabbin. And I was thinking about it this morning, and people, if they're trying to struggle to understand what Moorabbin means to St Kilda people, it's the same as what it, like the Junction Oval to Melbourne or Arden Street to North Melbourne. And the only exception I could probably find was Hawthorn and Glen Ferry, but it's the spiritual home. There's something about it that you can't touch it and you can't really see it. You just feel it. And, I think going to Seaford, it just didn't feel like home for a long period of time.
Can you understand then some of the reaction from the broader population who are saying, this is a joke, you blokes are soft, I'm a miner, I get up and travel 500 kilometres going to joints I don't want to go to either, but our expectation is you deal with it and get on with it. You might have a week where you're feeling with your noses pointed out, but you get on with it.
Yep.
When asked whether the move had ripped the soul out of the club, Rui said, no doubt.
That's a strong call. Yeah, and it is, and in some ways it's probably right. I mean, I was a professional athlete and our job was to perform. But to put it simply, Gaz, it was a place that we didn't really want to be. And sorry about that, it's a little fella.
That's right. So that's twice now. That's two of the most senior players of the St Kilda Footy Club saying they're at a place they didn't want to be.
Yeah.
Did you raise this? Did you bring this up with senior management?
It was a tough start to 2011. We'd also come off two lost grand finals, which is obviously heart-wrenching and emotional. But also then we're moving to somewhere. And I still remember the day that Archie Fraser, who was the CEO at the time, told us that we were moving from Moorabbin to Seaford. And it started off as, you know, it's a 20-minute drive, guys. It won't be a huge change to your lifestyle. You probably spoke for 20 minutes. By the end of it, he conceded that it was about 45 minutes. Yes, I think in hindsight, maybe we were a bit precious that we were so attached to Moorabbin, but we loved it. We loved everything about that place, and then we were told to go to Seaford, which felt a bit artificial. It wasn't our home, and yes, the facilities were really nice, but to be honest, Gaz, I would have taken Moorabbin the way it was when we left in 2010, where there was parts that were literally falling down, when our ice bars were a pre-mould spa and we'd sit around it. I would have taken that over going to Seaford. Any day of the week.
Had you stayed at Moorabbin then, in that mindset, do you think you would have been more successful?
I wouldn't say we would have necessarily won anything more, but I think our 2011 campaign, where I think we lost to Sydney in the first final, I think we would have had a better season. What that would have ended up being, I don't know, but I think we would have had a better year, yes.
Del, good morning. To follow up what Gaz said then, at any stage did you as a leadership group go, right, this is clearly an issue. Obviously, we can't move back to Moorabbin, but we have to embrace this place.
Yeah.
Yep. Did that happen?
Yeah, we did. We had multiple meetings, Hutto, where as a senior group, and we had a really strong leadership group at that stage, and obviously Nick was the head of it. We also had guys like Lenny Hayes, some other really senior players that had been through a lot together, where we basically had to just sort of suck it up a little bit. We were at a place that we didn't want to be, but our messaging to the group, and this wasn't discussed publicly, never spoken about publicly, but we definitely discussed it internally about, okay, we need to just dig in, get back to work, and just go about our job, and just trying to get better every day, to be honest. But there was always a feeling that, okay, we're not, I don't know, we just weren't where we really wanted to be location-wise. And it's not about the travel, it's not about Seaford personally as a place, but it's just something special to St Kilda people about Moorabbin. It was simple as that.
Well, I'm sure the St Kilda supporters who are listening now are damn happy they're back there.
Yeah, well, that's the positive side of it, isn't it?
You've got to look at an upside.
Well, you know what's funny? I was there a couple of days ago doing just catching up with a couple of people at some work stuff, and it's a new facility. It's got everything that it needs, and it was very similar to Seaford when we first went there. Everything's brand new and everything looks Mickey now, but it's at Moorabbin, and it had that feel again, even though everything was new. So I think, if anything, that the heartland of the St Kilda people, which they've known for decades, apart from probably the last 8 years, I think it's back. So it was a really nice feel the other day.
There was no lattes around out at Seaford either, was there, Del, really?
Well, that was the other time, Hutto. It's, and once again, nothing against Seaford. It's a lovely place down there near the water.
You're not selling me on Seaford, Del.
Well, I wouldn't expect you down there with me anytime, so you'd probably drive there and get down to your house in Portsea Way, but we did have a nice little base set up around here. We had some nice cafes, and it wasn't unusual for 20 of us to go for lunch for an hour or two every day together. So it was very comfy at some point.
Del, it's a very busy weekend of sport ahead. We appreciate you giving us some time this morning, and good calling.
Thank you very much, Gaz. Have a good day.
Nick Del Santo.
Has it changed your thoughts?
No. No, of course not. Nick confirmed exactly what the other Nick had said, and yeah, that's the judgment's not on that. The honesty from both boys is really admirable, but the question that remains now is how much of an impact did it have on that footy club and their ability to push on and push forward, and did the reluctance of the senior group to go there permeate throughout the course of that group? And, yeah, if they're not happy and they're dissatisfied, then it has an impact on the way you perform.
Wouldn't want to be auctioning my house at Seaford this week.
No, after the break, we're going to throw some lines open.
It's a lovely place, Tim.
Get back to front and centre with Hutto, half glass half full, glass half empty, and we'll get through the rest of the teams.
For Schnitz, handmade pan-cooked schnitzel and Melbourne Airport parking. Up to 3 hours terminal parking, now only $24.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport. Breakfast with Gary Lyon and Tim Watson.
From our supporters' perspective, our encouragement is for them to embrace this year.
Our expectation is that we continue to improve and grow.
We know that our plans are pretty simple, pretty solid. We know that the players believe in it at this point.
Really, there's no ceiling on it. It's a young group, but it's really exciting. We want to grow.
More on the Saints story coming up, but we're front and centre at the moment at 22-9. We're doing glass half full, glass half empty on the Melbourne teams,
Gaz. What about the others?
Next week. Collingwood, glass half full. Bucks is finally in full control of not just the team, but the club, as he articulated yesterday. He'll finally get the run with injuries he's craved, and the team can improve on what it did in 2018. Darcy Moore to defence. It's a masterstroke. Cox and Grundy swapping ruck and forward. Something different will give them a target and encourage the mids, where they've got great depth, to move it quicker. Glass half empty. Nothing's changed. Bucks is under pressure. Same key players. The key to scoring are injured or have been. The game plan looks the same. Cox as a forward will never work in a game that relies on forward pressure and forward half turnovers. And their training is crap. According to Jonathan Brown.
Are you a half full, half empty, Gary?
I hate to say it, because I'm like, someone on this accused me of being a harsh marker on Collingwood. I'm a bit more half empty than half.
Tim?
I don't want to dodge this.
Yeah, well, you are, the way you started.
But I just don't know.
Just answer it.
One day I'm a half full, the next day I'm a half empty.
What are you today?
Today I'm a half full. Yesterday I was a half empty.
Oh, you are weak.
Essendon.
You know, I find them, in all honesty, I find them one of the more difficult teams to get a handle on.
Them and Hawthorn are my two that I'm not quite sure on at this stage. Essendon, full, recruited the best of any team. Smith has shown to the JLT that he is going to be a class midfielder who can go forward. Saad will give them incredible run, and Stringer has knuckled down. They've got two of the best five young guns in the game in Danaher and Merritt. Joe could win the Coleman and the Brownlow. McGrath will join them soon. Maybe they made the eight last year, and they'll only get better. Empty. They haven't addressed their needs, rely too much on winning the ball in the back half, and just don't work, and that just doesn't work anymore in big games. The midfield is slow. Stringer is unreliable. Fantasia's a huge loss at the start of the year. Relying on Joe Danaher when he kicks the way he does is fraught with danger.
Half full for me. Gary?
Yeah, I'm half full.
Geelong.
Hey, can I just one question on that?
Yep.
Hooker, by the end of the year, will he be playing forward or back, do you think?
Well, you know my thoughts on that. I think he should be playing back. And the way footy's played, I think he should be playing back.
Yeah, I actually agree. And I wonder how long it will take before that happens. Geelong, full. Ablett, Dangerfield, Selwood. Need I say more? Actually, I will. Mitch Duncan, who has elevated himself almost to their levels. Averaged 29 disposals last year, an elite ball user. With Menegola, Young Kelly, Scott Selwood, Blitzarves, and the wildcard Cockatoo, it's the best midfield in the comp. Some of them can go forward. 9 games at home, they make the top 4, they always do. Empty. Lost both games in the JLT. Ablett and Danger have already shown they're fragile. Clearly the Cats rely on the big three way too much. Joel Selwood's played 250 games. He's getting along in the teeth. Their defence is particularly vulnerable with Henderson injured and Mackie and Lonergan gone. Forward line gives no more confidence with so much relying on Hawkins. And big question marks over where the pressure will come from. Half full, half empty for the Cats.
I'm half full. I bought in very early in the piece to Dangerfield, Ablett, and so I'm a little bit concerned about the soft tissues, but I'm still on board.
I'm full. I'm half full only because Ablett has arrived there. Had he not arrived there, I'd be half empty.
Right, that much difference.
Yep.
We saw him last night, Gaz, at the SEN launch.
Yeah, spoke to about that today already. He is so positive about the way his body's holding up. He said he's had that little issue, but he's 100%, and he wants to be the midfield player. He don't want to be the forward. He wants to be the midfield player.
Hawthorn, half full. They have Clarko, the best in the business. Showed that last year. Moved everyone around. Burton, Howe, Sicily, and others revealed. O'Meara has a year under his belt, ready to blossom. Mitchell has shown he can lead the midfield. Cyril's back. What a difference that makes. Ruffy will be better. And there are a host of multiple premiership players like Bruce Smith, Gunston, Puopolo, Shields, Stratton. You can't underestimate them. Half empty. Loss of Hodge and Gibson from defence. Significant, especially with Birchall still a long-term out. And it's unrealistic to expect too much of ageing players like Burgoyne and Roughhead. As good as those multiple premiership players are, it's hard to see who the elite players are at Hawthorn, other than maybe Mitchell and Burton in the future.
Half empty.
I'm half empty too, and it's based on the fact that I had the feeling that O'Meara was going to be a star performer. I'm unsure about whether or not he's going to be able to reproduce what we saw early in his career.
I'm not a throw the keys out half empty job, you know, spit the dummy, this club's going nowhere. I think it's just the reality half empty that they've been up for so long and they're just going to take their time to rebuild.
They're going to have to restock their talent base though too.
Yep.
North Melbourne, half full. I got some help with this. I needed some. From a North fan. Goldie's back to his best, and what a difference that'll make. Ben Brown, one of the best young forwards in the comp, and only getting better. Tarrant, Zeeble, Higgins, Cunnington will lead the way. Luke Davies-Uniac has North fans buzzing. Played seniors at Rye at 16. Hartung can give them the run they need. Bruce, Simpkin, Wood will make them better. Getting ready for next year's Super Draft.
Very well done.
That means finishing down near the end.
Got you.
Empty. Two big losses in the JLT is about where North are at. The fact they still rely on Waite and Thompson shows that the talent underneath is still a long way off, other than Davies-Uniacke. Zeeble and Cunnington, Tarrant are tough, honest, fine players, but there just isn't enough class. Jury still out on the young players we saw last year for the first time.
They are rebuilding half empty for me.
Same, half emptier, and again, not the end of the world. Well, it is a bit because they didn't quite get there like the Hawks, but it is a half empty.
Okay, Bulldogs, half full. A year after they were after what happened, they are stung and want to prove 2016 was no fluke. They have the best young all-round star in the AFL in the Bont. They have likes of McRae and a revitalised Libber and a youngster and Aaron Norton who's a ready-made defender. At their best, they can create the forward half turnovers required in modern footy. They know how to play premiership football, and the versatility developed last year under Bevo will shine through this year. Half empty. Coach is upset. He's grumpy. He was a genius to pull off the flag. He did, but the moves last year didn't work as the players struggled to produce anywhere near their best. They've been beset by injuries again. Losing Adams and Morris exposes a young defence. It's hard to see where the winning score is going to come from. Eastern Wood looks like a fish out of water up forward so far, and Shacky is still a long way off.
I'm half full on this. I think I'm a big believer in Beveridge as a coach and what he's capable of producing. There's a lot of snarl about the Bulldogs, and I think that'll manifest itself in a really positive way on field.
I'm half empty. I just can't work out what they're doing forward of the ball, forward of the centre. I just can't see the clear pattern. None of those big, super tall guys have absolutely grabbed it by the throat at this stage, and that's my concern.
How many games do you think Shacky will play for them this year?
Six.
That's not many.
No, it's five. It's five more than one, and five more than...
That's four less than ten.
Two to go. St Kilda, half full. Moves to Moorabbin, which is going to give the players and the club a huge boost, and the coffee shops. As good as they were, Revolt and Montagna's departure clears the air for a renewal and a new generation to put their own stamp. Billings and Gresham will join Stevens to lead the way. Ben Dixon's goal-kicking expertise will see them barely miss a shot in 2018, or else there'll be trouble for Dicko. Pat McCartan was number one draft pick for a reason. He's ready to go. Empty. We've heard it. We've all heard it. No proven stars now that Rui is gone. One pace midfield and a tall forward line in an era of pressure forwards. They're still too inconsistent and rely on manic pressure when they can't, which they can't seem to bring every week. They've had a good run with injuries for 2 years without making the eight, so that luck might run out. Plus, Gary has tipped them, I think, for 14th. Maybe that's half full, actually.
Yeah, I'm half empty on the Saints. I'm a little bit with Gary here. Gary said that the window... Well, no, you did say
the window.
I know, but you said that they missed their opportunity and they're going to head in the wrong direction. I'm a little bit with you. I think they've just about done as much as they can with their pressure football, and they are still going to be missing some quality top-end type talent at both ends of the field.
You stole my whole spear. Well done.
Right. Okay. Last but not least of the Victorian teams, Melbourne. They are ready for the glass half full. Driven by the disappointment of missing out last year, like the Tigers and Dogs before, they're perfectly placed for the big jump up. Lever's inclusion gives them the intercept marking to add to their runners and ball users without a defence. Gorn is the best ruck in the AFL, and he's back. Viney, Oliver, Jones provide the grunt with Petrarca the class to get the ball to Hogan, who's ready to go again, and complemented by a versatile forward line, Bailey Fritsch, what a big addition. Good depth. They should at least make the top four. Half empty. They're still a young team. As Brownie says, they obviously have a soft underbelly because they didn't want to go to a tough camp. You'd have to be a bit worried about their run out of defence other than Hunt with older guys like Lewis and Vince back there. Lever's a good interceptor but hasn't proven he can do it one-on-one, and Oscar is vulnerable. Tom McDonald's unproven as a forward, and even Jesse Hogan we're not completely sold about. Expectations are very high, and we know how the Demons go when the expectations are high.
I'm with Gary. I'm a half full man on the Demons. Although I am Jack concerned. Viney. I'm actually concerned about Jack Viney.
And Jack
now,
Viney.
And I'm also concerned about Tom McDonald as well.
Because what's going on with toes at the moment?
Well, what's going on with Tom McDonald in a hot spot on his foot? That's a real concern, yeah, I would have thought.
I'm with you. I'm concerned about both those.
Because he's a vitally important player, either as the backup key position defender, but also the fact that they were going to send him forward this week to accompany Jesse, or this year to accompany Jesse Hogan. So that is a real concern.
Outstanding debut from Hutto front and centre. You and Jared Waitley tonight calling is going to be special for SEN listeners.
Special.
You two have called before, but not on radio.
No, we haven't. Only twice before together. And so looking forward. It's going to be fantastic. So can't wait for a massive weekend of footy. I've been a bit crook. It's been a bit of a race against time, but
you've been crook.
I'll be there.
You are a trooper.
And from normal on front and centre each week, I want to have Coach Gary and Coach Jim. I'll ask some questions about the weekend ahead. We obviously, with the Saints story taking over, we didn't get time for that this morning, but I'm looking forward to that each week, boys.
Looking forward to listening tonight. I've had a look at all the whole radio schedule and across the gamut of calling.
And
where have you got our team? There's only one place and only one team you want to be listening to tonight. I'll give you the tip right now. Hudson and Waitley.
The Schnitz, handmade pan-cooked schnitzel, and Melbourne Airport parking. One-day terminal parking, now only $51.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport. Breakfast with Gary Lyon and Tim Watson.
In for Gary Hocking, forced to kick with that left foot. Not bad, looks for hit. What a spiky!
Well, they reckon Dustin Martin is big at this stage, and some are calling him the biggest player ever, Wispy, but you just said to me, Gavin Wanganine back in 93, was that the Brownlow year?
Yep.
1993, was as big as any footballer that you've come across in terms of popularity and rock star status.
Think of Justin Bieber at his absolute peak.
Right.
And you're almost somewhere near the popularity of Gavin Wanganine back in
1993. He told me a story of girls just trying to break down doors to get to him. He joined us on the line. He's in town for the big game tomorrow night, Bombers versus the Crows. G'day, Gav.
G'day, boys. How you going?
Oh, just excited to talk to you. I've been reminiscing with Wispy in the ad break about your career and some of the stories he was telling me. It must have been hard to even get from your car to the training ground.
Yeah, there were some tough times there, Gaz.
Hey, tell us about the night the outside plumbing on the toilets came crashing down, Gavin.
Oh, I don't know, Tim. What was that? What was that one?
Well, that was when there was a lot of girls. There's like a whole group of girls that would follow Gav absolutely everywhere.
Yep.
And just to get a better spot of him and a better sighting on him, they climbed the plumbing pipes on the outside of the toilets and they came crashing down one night trying to get a glimpse of you.
Yeah, there were a few tough nights at training, Tim, just trying to get back to the car. A few of the security guys had to help me get back to the car. So, yeah, they were interesting days, weren't they?
Gary, have you ever heard of that? Security had to actually be attached to him to get him from his training venue to his car.
I'm not surprised, but you also did say when you were telling the story about the plumbing coming down, Gavi said, actually, I think they're trying to get a look at the Wisp. That was what he said to me during the ad break. Hey, you're the first Bomber legend for 2018. You got to get into your seats by 7:30 tomorrow night, Essendon fans. And what's your role on the night?
I think my role is, I think it's a little bit low-key, a little bit of a surprise, but I think there'll be an interview. I think I might be going onto the ground at some stage and doing a little bit of a walk around the boundary line. So that'll be good to be able to engage with a lot of the old Bomber supporters who probably over the years did support me. So it's always a pleasure coming back to Melbourne and being welcomed back at the Red and Black. We've still got Red and Black blood running through my veins and had a wonderful 6 years in Melbourne and at the Essendon Footy Club. Great memories that I'll take with me forever.
Hey, Gav, you've become a renowned artist as well. You're still doing a lot of painting?
Yes, Tim. My art's going really well. I'm really enjoying what I'm doing at the moment and I'm really busy. And, who would have thought, going from a professional footy career into a professional art career, it's sort of, I have to pinch myself sometimes. It's pretty different to what I'm used to, but yeah, really enjoying it.
And what hopes have you got for the Bombers and perhaps your other side, Port Adelaide? Where do you see both finishing this year?
Yeah, well, I think we all know they both have recruited well over the pre-season with some pretty handy inclusions. So the squads will be improved dramatically and they'll have a little bit more depth there. So I expect both teams to have really good seasons.
And your boy, Tex, isn't it?
That's it.
Yep. What age is he now?
He's 15 this year.
15. And is his footy progressing nicely still? And is he still favouring Essendon over Port Adelaide, father-son?
Yeah, look. He enjoys his footy. He knows how to play the game. He reads it well. And, like a lot of kids at that age who've got the talent, just a matter of, whether he wants to take to the next level and work really hard. So just hope he enjoys it. And look, he likes both teams. I mean, living in Adelaide, though, Port have probably got a little bit more of an advantage, just only because he lives there. But if footy's his go and that's what he wants to do, and if he's good enough when he gets to around 18 years of age, who knows what he's thinking? Then it's his decision, and I don't want to influence him in any way, shape, or form. But it'll be 50-50, hey?
Well, imagine the excitement for Essendon fans or Port Adelaide fans to see another Wanganine in their midst. Hey, the first Bomber legend for 2018. Enjoy it. Friday night at Etihad Stadium. Gavin, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening to the Best of SEN Breakfast Podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. If you're hungry for more, head to sen.com.au. Otherwise, be tuning in tomorrow on the 1116 SEN station, app or website. Bye for now.